Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy. All right, welcome back, Bobcat fans. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the R&R CatCast. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Foley. He's your host, Ryan Thornburg. We are the Ryans of the R&R, the Montana State affiliate of the Big Sky Podcast Network. And we want to thank our sponsor this year, Gear Up Sports. They've been with us all season. They're a youth sports platform focused on solving uniform and apparel headache for coaches. If you're gearing up for spring sports and you need player packs or uniforms, please contact them at www.gearupwithus.com and make sure to mention the R&R CatCast. We're here to do a season redux of the 2023 season. We're going to talk all about how the Cats did and just our thoughts on that. Final closing thoughts for the football season.
Sounds good, man. And good to be back on the microphone. You've been killing it. You and Zach have been killing the basketball stuff. I haven't had a chance to hop on that. So it's been a while since I was on here to finally recap the crazy 2023 Bobcat football season, which is unfortunately over. So we'll talk about it.
Well, you were supposed to jump on with Zach one of those nights, and you were like, I can't go tonight. And he was like, hey, Thorny or Foley, can you go in a pinch? I was like, sure. And I knew nothing about the game. And so I want to say thanks to Zach for giving me all the softball questions and asking me nothing important about the games. I think I passed.
That's what a good host does. He makes everybody sound informed, even if they're not. And I'm hoping that you do me this service here tonight, because the reason I haven't been able to record is I've had some stuff going on a little bit, and I haven't had a whole lot of time to dive into some of the stuff we're going to talk about tonight, especially some of the Golden Cooley questions. So you're going to have to carry a little bit of the research-heavy stuff here, because I just haven't had a chance to look into some of the stuff.
Okay. Well, the season rundown, or excuse me, episode rundown is going to be, we're going to talk about the coaching changes. We'll get into the vegan signing day presser. I'm going to give you some rundown on the new class and all the players we signed. We signed 19 new Bobcats. Exciting for those guys. We'll go into the offense and defense and special teams, grade those out, give them a letter grade, and then we'll go into the Golden Cooley questions, which there's some pretty good ones in there. So it's just a season redux. We're putting the final thoughts on this the journey of 2023, the up and down season it was. But yeah, I guess it's going to be a little bit cathartic for both you and I. I know when we first got on, I said, I think that fans are going to eat this up. I, for one, have been jonesing for any Bobcat content I can get, and you've just been the opposite. So I don't know where this is going
to
fall.
I've been hiding under a rock, not wanting to listen to anything that discusses this season.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point for you to be right now, because then you could just get it out, and it's then possible. We'll move forward.
All right.
I think first we got to talk about what's in our Golden Coolies.
What's in your Golden Coolie?
What's in your Golden Coolie? It's brought to you by Wilbur Ellis. Go see Shea Richter and Company up in the Golden Triangle, Fort Benton, for all your farming and fertilizer needs. I've had this one for a while, and I wasn't sure what beer I was going to drink for this special episode, this season recap episode. And I kind of came up with this. It's Hockey Haze, a hazy pale ale from Hot Valley. I think it's the official craft beer of the Seattle Kraken. I'm picking it because football season's over, man. So we're on to other sports. It's hockey. Why not? That's all I got. It's good, man. It's a good beer. It's a tall boy. It's 20 IBU. So right in my sweet spot, 20s and 30s. Loving it. It's tasty.
Sometimes I don't feel like I even know you. Come at me with a hazy pale.
Yeah, I like hazy pails.
Okay, exactly. Like, where does that come from? Anybody who's listened to this podcast long enough knows you're not a hop guy.
This is 20 IBUs, man. I can live with that.
Okay.
That's like a light beer.
All right. Raise your hand if you're confused, right? Because I know a lot of us out there are like, what?
Pale ales and IPAs are not the same. Okay.
Close.
No.
Close.
Close, but not quite. Like Sierra Nevada's a pale ale. I like that.
They're like in the same tree branch or whatever. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. One tastes like a tree, one doesn't.
All right. I have a Pacifico in a can.
There you go.
That's all. and a Rainier backup. So that's what I got going on tonight.
Got a backup. Nice. I wasn't sure if I was going to do a backup or not, but a few sips of this, talking some Bobcat football, I feel like I should probably have a backup, but cross that bridge when we get there.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens, but let's talk about the coaching changes. That was exciting. Bobby Daly being promoted to defensive coordinator with co-defensive coordinator Sean Howe. Now, out of both defensive coaches, I on the defensive side of the ball, those are my two favorite coaches. So immediately, I'm just stoked. Coach Fegan said it was really hard for him to let go Willie Mack, but really easy to promote Sean and Coach Daly to that spot.
I did not listen to the press conference. As I said, I pretty much have been avoiding everything. Was there any sort of reason given by Vegan for moving on from Willie?
In a way, kind of. I did not write down the quote, but it seems to me he said something akin to, our defense just needs to look a little bit different going into next year.
As Midwest Vegan niceness for you.
Yeah, I took that meaning he probably wants us to be more aggressive, more productive. When you look at the stats for Montana State's defense nationally and within the conference, you're going to start to see a picture of why Montana State is not playing right now. You know, if you want to be a nationally elite team, Montana State's defense wasn't. And so I think it was a tough decision because him and Willie Mack clearly have a friendship. They have coached in a couple different teams together many different years, and I imagine that's a pretty tough conversation. Imagine you and I working, and I'm head coach, of course, and you are the defensive coordinator, and I have to let you go. And we've been buddies for a long time. That's probably
I'm burning it down on the way out the door.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? So, do you think it was a good move? Do you think Willie Mack had to kind of go, or we'll be better off without him? I guess however you want to phrase it. I don't want to be too harsh or anything, but to move on.
Yeah, I think there was some changes needed in the defense that I was specifically wanting, specifically to be more aggressive, to be more multiple in our looks. I was excited for that. I know a lot of Bobcat Nation is excited for that, and they're waiting for the Coach Housewright demotion. I don't think that's coming.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think some Bobcat fans will be disappointed, but slash angry about that. Some people are pretty heated about that.
Yeah, and reasonably. But if you look at, on the flip side of that coin, if you look at the Montana State offense nationally, where we ended up and in the conference, we're really one of the top offenses nationally. So numbers don't lie. Stats don't lie. Coach Housewright's tact and personality and whatever off football antics that has happened, that's another conversation, and it's something to be considered.
Yeah,
we just don't know what happened.
To be ignored.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's, you know, when the court dates are set and everything comes out, then there needs to be some decisions, and there's probably a plan in place, and we're not privy to that, but we'll see what happens.
I agree. I think it was time for Willie to probably go. I do give him credit. I thought this year's defense was better than last year's defense. Last year's defense was pretty miserable for stretches. They got better as the season went on. And this year we kind of started off pretty good and then kind of got a little worse as the season went on, which is kind of a theme of, I think, the entire Bobcat team. They never got bad, but we started off pretty darn good out the gate, and we weren't able to maintain that. We dipped a little bit. We'll get into that maybe later on in the Redux section, but I do think it was time to probably make a change and inject some blood and see if we can't get something else going back there. And super happy for Bobby Daly, Coach Daly. Love that guy. Great Bobcat. Glad to see him get his turn.
Now, what do you think about the co-defensive coordinator?
That surprised me, actually. I thought Daly would be capable and ready to do that himself, and I'm not sure what the strategy is here. Is that to keep Sean Howe around? Does he think he's going to leave? So that's kind of a throwing a bone a little bit to keep him on the staff for a little bit longer. I'm not sure. I don't love co-coordinator situations all that much in particular. But I think he's a good coach, and I think they've been working together. I think it'll, if it's going to work, it's going to work here, I think. But don't know.
One of the media members pressed vegan on that a little bit, and vegan talked his way out of it, saying essentially Coach Daly is going to be the guy calling the shots on Saturday, but their roles will be very similar. They should work together hand in hand throughout the week. And he thought that just their working relationship lent this well to this this dual position, and that he would not give that to any new coach. So he was excited about it, but he still got he left with going like, why?
But why?
I kind of think it might be a money thing. Yeah. Like, right, Coach Howe is
to give him a little bit more money.
We want to keep him, give him a little bit more money, give him a little bit more responsibility, keep him in the staff.
Yeah.
But that's just speculation.
Either way, I'm super happy for both those guys. I think they're both good coaches. And I'm super excited to have Jody Owens back in Bozeman.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
Let's go, man.
That guy. He's one of my favorite Bobcats of all time. We interviewed him. He's been vocal with us about, hey, man, anything I can do to get back to Bozeman for years. That is a great story because he is a guy that paid his dues. It took some time, but he made it back to Bozeman. I am so stoked. I mean,
he had his chance extremely briefly at the end of the Rob Ash era. So yeah. felt so bad for the guy. So now he's back, and I'm loving it. So defensive staff rounding out, liking what I see. I think the defense should be improved. The talent-wise will be the question mark, I think. Replacing some key pieces, but I think there's an improvement to be made from the scheme and the play calling.
Well, Coach Vegan did say the scheme should be the same. My question is, are we going to start using maybe a third linebacker instead of a nickel all the time? That would be something I'd be interested in.
Not if we're happy with the nickel spot. And I think if Dowler is healthy, I think he locks it down.
It's a big if.
It's a big if. Because if it wasn't him and it wasn't Lavelle Price, it wasn't pretty.
No, that's true.
Miles Jackson is just, I don't think he's a fit for nickel, but he was there. He's playing it, and he did okay. But I think Lavelle Price and Dowler, whose first name is driving me crazy right now. Do you remember his first
Caden?
Name? Caden. Yeah, if it wasn't one of those two guys, it was like, I was surprised that Aiden Parks didn't play there. Some other guys I thought would have been there before Miles Jackson. So that'll be a question mark for sure. What do we do with the nickel spot?
Somebody on Bobcat Nation, I can't remember who, but they kind of had a theory about Willie Mack had his guys, and if you weren't part of his kind of crew, you weren't getting playing time. And I think that had something to do with the Cade Cutler moving on to Montana and into the transfer portal. If that's true, maybe we lack some development with our younger players getting some playing time. And going forward, I know, like, hey, linebacker is a spot of concern for sure. And depth right there is something we really need. So I wonder if Bobby Daly and now Coach Howe will have a different philosophy or allow younger guys to get some game reps, at least, you know, get them out there.
Yeah.
See what they could do.
Got to have some more depth. We got to develop more depth. It seemed like the further the season went on, the more we stuck to our guns, our bell cows.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, that was that. And coaching changes. Super stoked for those guys, man. I can't wait.
Yeah.
That was good news. Like, there was not a lot of good news coming out of Bobcat camp. I'm not saying Willie Mack being let go is good news. But the energy that Coach Daly brings, who I think could be a future head coach for the Montana State Bobcats. I love Coach Howe. I know his D-line loves him as well. We've heard that firsthand from multiple sources. I think this is a good move. Good move.
I agree. Real quick here, before we get on to the signing class or anything. Speaking of bad news, I think the last we left off was before Sebastian Valdez had entered the portal. So I think we should cover a few more roster changes before we move on. Valdez is now a Husky. Seabass presumably secured that bag to go to Seattle. Good for him. It's going to be tough to replace him. He left, and then the Cade Cutler news, today, right? Today, yeah. Announced real fast, he's in the portal, and then like an hour later, Grizz. So,
that's weird.
that's fun. That's pretty fun development. It's like one more little nut tap from the Chris. Probably a bad choice of words there, but just can't win, man. It's like, but the good news was signing day. Can you imagine if we didn't have signing day amidst all this portal stuff, amidst the season ending earlier than we wanted to, if there wasn't this little ray of hope of the signing early signing day period, if we just had to sit here and stew on without any news, good news at all?
It's just like Depressionville.
Pretty much.
For a lot of Bobcats. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Because mining Bobcat Nation right now is just getting old because it's the same four threads at the top. And it's just people starting to get like bickering with each other.
I mean, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah. A lot of guys, just a lot of time on their hands and not a lot of Bobcat football. I was sitting here today. I'm on break. I'm a teacher. We all know this. I'm like, man, I just want to watch some Bobcat football. I actually went back and listened to an episode from us even on my morning run this morning, and just to get a flavor for Bobcat football. Unfortunately, I picked the Cat Grizz preview, and we were so wrong. I was saying in the Cat Grizz preview, it doesn't really matter if we lose this game. Well, it does, because we were right in the prediction of what's the most important thing to get to the national championship. Home field advantage, the number two seed. So, oh man.
It didn't really matter though, because we got home field advantage, at least for the first game. We lost it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we didn't even have a chance.
Who saw North Dakota State come in to the first game? Oh, wow.
Yep.
Anyways, yeah, it's fun to go back sometimes to listen to where we were wrong and where we were right.
We're wrong more than we're right, I'm pretty sure.
that's the truth. All right. Well, I do have a little bit of a fashion watch. So if you have that sound bite ready, remember what button that is?
Which button is that?
And now, Bobcat fans, it's time for FNF Fashion Watch, brought to you by Foley and Fisher, the only two that seem to really care what Brent Vegan is wearing at his press conference.
There's only four buttons, and I know what two of them are. There's our little intro that we do to jazz ourselves up that you guys will never hear. Then there's the Golden Cooley one, and then I couldn't remember what the other one was. I had a 50-50 chance, and I blew it. Oh, well.
Twice. Okay. All right. Yes, Coach Vegan for the signing day presser wore a blue navy suit, a starched white shirt, and a yellow and blue striped tie, a pattern tie with white accents. A different tie than I haven't seen before, so this looks to me to be a new tie for signing day, no pocket square.
New tie watch.
New tie watch. Coach Vegan. All right.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Before we get into the mix of all the players, the Bobcats signed 5 from Washington, 3 from Texas, 1 from Idaho, 1 from Wyoming, and 8 from Montana. We have a transfer from Maine. We have 9 defensive players and 10 offensive players. Most notably, we didn't sign a quarterback. That was on purpose. And still, you have to sign a kicker if we are going to sign a kicker. So just a couple things right before we get into it.
All right.
All right. Well, if you watch the presser, Coach Vegan went player by player alphabetically, but he started with Rohan Jones, which is a player out of Maine, a guy from Canada, Quebec, Canada. He's a 6'3", 215-pound junior who played for the Bears last year. He's transferring. He has 2 years left for us.
235.
He is the definition of H-back. They want him to be the replacement for Snell. Yep. I think it was the right place, the right time for both programs.
No, he looked... He did a lot of that same kind of stuff at Maine. I think he even like returned some kicks. It's like a carbon copy of how they used him. Now, will it translate on the field, how well he played and all that stuff? I don't know. But pretty excited about that one, to kind of have a Snell replacement right out the gate.
And keep in mind, when you're listening to this, you're going to hear a lot of different tight ends. I think Montana State's going somewhere with the tight end position. But he's one of the guys. So we're going to sign a lot of different body types. And in that room, you're going to have a lot of different skill sets. But I think that's intentional. All right.
Just go all tight end wideouts. Just no wide receivers.
In short, blocking. I think you're going to start seeing
Just blocking a lot everywhere.
Yeah, 12 and 13 personnel. You could have a guy like Ryan Bowles in there, or excuse me, not Ryan Bowles, Rohan Jones in there, flex him out from like a out of line tight end position to the H-back. So you could have a 13 personnel, but one of them being the H-back back there. I don't know where we're going with the tight ends, but it could be the new, if we're not going to run a two quarterback system, maybe we're going to try to innovate through the tight end position.
Love it. Why not?
All right.
Some big shoes to fill there in the tight end room.
It kind of is.
Trayton Pickering and Derek Snell both moving on. It's tough.
All right. Let's start it in with the high school guys. Ryan Bowles, linebacker, 6'2", 210 from Woodinville, Washington. Coach Daly said he's a good tackler in space. 6'2", 210, that's a good frame. And we're going to be looking for guys to develop early. And I remember Coach Vegan saying this, that Ryan could be one of those guys that maybe not this year, but could get some soon playing time on that. Seth Brock, a defensive end, 6'3", 211 from Eagle, Idaho. I remember we saw this guy. He was just, I mean, he looks like he's chiseled from granite. This guy, his abs, his arms, he just looks like all he does is starve himself and pump iron because he just, there's no body fat on this guy. Explosive, aggressive, wrestler type of mentality. We're going to lose some guys on the defensive end. Give me the guys who are losing on defensive end. I'm blanking on their names.
Ben Seymour.
Ben Seymour and we're losing another guy from
the transfer from Nebraska. Yes, yep.
So this guy defensive end is a position we're always going to try to fill. And Seth from Eagle, Idaho, outside Boise there. So good to have him. Key Christensen, wide receiver, 6 foot, 170 from Dillon, Montana. His dad was a legacy. His dad Matt Christensen played for Montana State. So Key played QB at Dillon, was a team leader, basically just a guy that gets stuff done over there. Another Dillon guy, high character, a guy that you just need to get rally the troops. This guy, to me, is a glue guy, but he's going to be productive for us as well. So excited to have him come over from Dillon. As we know, it's a good pipeline.
It's a good pipeline now. Yep.
One of the most interesting guys I saw in this recruiting class was a guy named Mason Deathman, a linebacker from Brockton, Montana, plays for Freud.
Freud Medicine Lake High School.
Yeah, there you go. 6'4", 210, six-man football stud. When you watch him out there, it's just, I mean, if you ever watch six-man football, Trayton Pickering played six-man football. Imagine trying to tackle Trayton Pickering. This guy played everywhere. I mean, safety, quarterback, linebacker. I mean, he plays everywhere on the six-man football team. He ran 11.4 in the 100 meters. I think if you ask me at the end of this, who is going to be a guy that comes out of this class and becomes the next star for Montana State, Mason Deathman could be this guy.
Yeah.
6'4", 210 right now, runs that fast. From six man, he's going to be a dude. He's just for Montana State. If he sticks around, he's your classic, like, that guy is the story we want to write about.
It was Corey, a friend of the pod, was texting me that his, like, super athletic family, like, his mom played, like, college basketball, like, Oklahoma or something. It's just crazy. It's like a family. Like, why are they living in Brockton? Like, how does that happen? Do they just, like, retire and go raise a farm? Are they all from Montana originally? Or raise a farm. You know what I mean? Start a farm. I don't know. I'm just up with that. But very intriguing prospect.
Next is Aiden Kaplan, an offensive lineman, 6'2", 285 from Montgomery, Texas. Not much on this guy. He was a late ad, but he came on the scene late for us. He's going to be projected as a center or a guard, so somewhere in the middle. Ontario Latin Henley, a running back, 5'11", 195. From Tacoma, Washington. Quick twitch.
I like this
tremendous
guy.
Ball. Yeah, tremendous ball skills. A guy that you just want to get in space. 5'11", 195 is a good size.
Yeah,
so we don't have...
Ready.
Go ahead. Yeah, he's ready. And he has a buddy where we're going to talk about here in a moment, too, that comes from Tacoma. I want to give props to Sam Mix. Sam Mix was our coach, our running backs coach, who recruited Washington this year. He brought in five guys. That's pretty...
Yeah,
pretty
it seems like you got some talented-looking guys to come to Bozeman.
Yeah. Rocky Lencioni, a tight end out of Bozeman, Montana. Tremendous ball skills. He's got the length and frame to be special. 6'3", 210. So another tight end there for you. Another guy from Bozeman deciding to stick around. It's important to get those guys. Coach Vegan's always going to talk about that. If we can get guys in Bozeman to stay in Bozeman, that's always like a hallmark for your program, right?
That's right.
So excited to get him in. One of my favorite players in the class next is Jace McMillan, a defensive back, 5'9", from 160, from Fulshear, Texas. Same high school that Drew Polidor went to. And if you're looking for straight speed, this guy has it in spades. He's one of the fastest dudes I've ever seen Montana State pick up. And
does he have some track times?
200 was... Oh, crud. I can't remember. It's in the write-up on MSU Bobcats, but he's just different speed. It's just different. You don't see guys like that. And the way Montana State was able to pick him up, I'm super, super excited to see what he can do. But 5'9", 160, smallish, but fast as heck.
About the same size as like Simeon Woodard coming out of high school, probably.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, defensive back, if he could be that future nickel. Seems kind of slight.
It's a little small. I think a little bit bigger there. Not that Tayo Kato was big necessarily. At least he wasn't initially.
Yeah.
I think he ended up pretty yoked by the time he graduated. But he wasn't no 160, though, when he by the end of it.
Okay. Ryan Ansel, a defensive back, 6 foot, 6 foot flat, 170 from Bozeman, went to Gallatin High School. He was second to long jump to Culture Petrie, who's also a defensive back on the current Montana State Bobcats. Safety projecting right there. Dalton Noble, offensive line, 6'4", 250 from Clancy, Montana.
Go Clancy.
Committed to first to Army and then had a kind of a, I don't know what happened, but he called Coach Vegan up and said he wanted to come back to Bozeman. So I think he was first... like committed to Montana State and then flipped to Army, or maybe it was committed to Army, then flipped back to Bozeman. But I'm
pretty excited about that one though.
Yep. Can't go wrong with 6'4", 250. Brennan Ross, defensive back, 5'10", Rockwall, Texas. We've had a couple guys from Rockwall. Give me the guy who's from Rockwall. Return punts for us.
Yeah,
the glasses.
Guy, man, now I should know this. He was like one of my favorite special teams players we ever had. Or like all
never had all a touchdown,
guys. All-purpose guys. Gosh, it's gonna drive me crazy. Anyways,
he ran a 10.7 in 100 meters. I think we're gonna project him at safety, or nickel. He could play that for us. That 5'10". So I think that's what Coach Figo is saying. Dane Steele, wide receiver. If you heard the Steele name, you probably know he's the brother from Coy and Brock Steele. 5'10", 175, shared in Wyoming. Wyoming for a player of the year on offense and defense, and the Max Preps player of the year for Wyoming. Come on. Could be the best deal, brother, we have. Oh,
that's impressive. That's impressive high school resume. Hey, real quick here. So 2008 roster, James Andrews, Everett Gilbert, Darius Jones, all Rockwall. So we had three guys on one roster.
I was thinking of Everett. Yeah.
That's what it was. Everett Gilbert. It was driving me crazy.
Yep. There it is. Okay. Almost there. AJ Tanupo, defensive tackle, 6'2", 295, Tacoma, Washington. Teammate of Ontario at one point. Rugby background. I couldn't believe this guy. This guy just, when you look at him, 6'2", 295, defensive tackle, this is exactly what the Bobcats need. He's one of the few players that won't need the physical development that we will see. A lot of the guys come up here.
He's going to probably play in the rotation right off the bat.
Yeah.
Especially with background. Valdez moving on.
Big time get for Montana State right there. He's one of my top players in this draft, in the signing class. Luvin Valson, a tight end, 6'1", 218 from Auburn, Washington.
I like his tape.
Yeah, I put future fullback, question mark. I didn't see his tape, but 6'1", 218. I think this guy likes to have the ball in his hands, had some playing time running the ball over at Auburn. Just tough. I think we're just stockpiling the tight end room and just figuring out ways to use these guys.
He is cut, man. He's a looks like a guy who spends a lot of time in the weight room. He's a good-looking kid.
Nice. I probably the star of the class, Hudson Wines, a kid from a defensive tackle, 6'3", 260 from Bozeman, Montana. The AA Defensive Player of the Year, had offers from the Grizzlies, had offers from a couple different big schools. I think Oregon State wanted him. Another one that's escaping me right now. But we were able to sign him. That's I think he's like if he's your star, that would make a lot of sense.
His recruitment kind of reminded me a little bit of Kenneth Eiden, the guy that like, come on, man, please just stay around. Like he's getting some big time looks. And when Eiden signed, I was like, yes. So I'm hoping Hunter Wines, because I think Eiden slowly improved, Hudson. Man. He's having a good, he's going to be a good one.
Well, he's a wrestler too. A lot of, and that's the thing you're going to see with a lot of these guys. They have like a wrestling background. We always love that. You know, if Coach Began said, essentially, he's like, Coulter asked him, he's like, what do you want? What are you looking for? In this class, and guys that sign for the Bobcats, they got to be tough. They got to be aggressive. They got to have the want to. We're going to develop guys. That's different than a lot of schools, and we'll talk about that a little later. But if you're coming to Montana State, we're going to develop you, and you have to be tough. All right. Josh Woodbury, linebacker, 5'11", 205 from Bozeman, Montana, went to Gallatin High School as well. His dad, Mike, played for the Bobcats, and so it's good. That's a good get. Jabez Woods, wide receiver, 5'11", 180 from Sonoma, Washington, or excuse me, Spanaway, Washington. Don't know much about this guy, but tough, open space kind of guy, get the ball in his hands. Didn't sign a lot of wide receivers, not a lot of big guys. So this was one of our taller ones at 5'11". And then the last one was Braden Zimmer, offensive line, 6'6", 225, Billings, Montana, future tackle. Right there.
Well, you're rushing it down at the end here.
I don't know. I don't have much to say about these guys. That's all I had.
Fair enough. Yeah. Woodbury reminds me of, and you're going to have to help me out here. We had that linebacker who was hurt quite a bit of his career. I think he was from Whitefish.
Josh Hill?
Yeah. Yep. He reminds me a lot of him. Just a tackling machine, two-time Eastern AA All-State linebacker. Also an All-State fullback. Look, I love it, man.
Nice.
Bobby Daly says he's a tackling machine who gobbles up ball carriers. If you can get in the box and mix it up in there and get off tackles, you're going to be productive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just like his bio and his size, everything just reads like Josh Hill. So,
go ahead.
No, I had nothing. I was just kind of wrap it up. So,
all right. One of the things Coach Vegan said about signing this class is the importance of getting these guys in Bozeman for a game day experience. Especially when you have guys that play big time ball in Texas. When they come up to Montana State, fans should know that what they're putting out in Bobcat Stadium is influencing these young men to come here, because it shows that Bobcat football matters. Montana State football matters.
Yep.
And it's a big freaking deal. And we're not getting these guys without your support in the stands. So this is a huge thing for us to have this elite game day experience, because when we stick a guy from Texas on the sidelines and they're just feeling the energy, heck yeah, they're gonna want to come here. They're gonna go to Cal Poly and take that same experience. Heck no. You know, they're gonna go to Idaho State, see that? No. Very few places can match Montana State. So our game day experience is a huge recruiting tool, getting these guys here on campus.
Yeah, Jeff Choate always just said, like, just get me the player to campus. That's all you gotta do, man. Get a guy to Bozeman, get him to a game. If he's been looking at other FCS schools, like it's gonna be over.
Yeah, and now show them the plans for the inside practice facility. Right,
that's right. Things are things are moving, man. We're putting money into it. Things are being built. We have fresh new things that were recently built. There's a lot to sell or recruit right now. And NIL affects this because a lot of schools are just kind of ignoring high school recruits right now. So we have an opportunity to land some big time guys that maybe you weren't getting 10 years ago because Washington, Oregon State, Oregon aren't recruiting guys anymore. They're not recruiting high school players at the level there. If you're not a five-star guy, well, they don't want you because you're not, because they have to work on you. They could just wait 3 years and poach a good FCS player or a transfer from another G5. So there'll be opportunity to sign some big time guys, and you can just hope that you make them love Bozeman and keep them around for the entire playing career.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. And Coach Vegan mentioned that. He's like, you know, there's more high schoolers available now. And it's exactly what you just said.
I'm smart. Just like Coach Vegan.
It's debatable.
All right. Yeah, it's true. Vegan's not as smart as me.
I think that's it, man. I mean, that's a solid looking class. If I break it down, we signed three linebackers, three defensive linemen, three offensive linemen, three wide receivers, three defensive backs, one running back, and three tight ends.
I think it's a really good high school class.
No quarterbacks.
No quarterbacks. So they must really like Reed Wilson. And is that it?
No, we have a guy named Duchesne in there. I think who's from Coeur d'Alene. I might be wrong. Maybe he's from... No, we got the guy from Spokane. Duchesne's from Spokane.
That's right. Okay, yeah. There's three guys that they feel good about behind Tommy. They're not all going to be around. It's just the nature of the beast. But you don't need a high school guy right now. They're all young. Like, all three of those guys are young players.
Does Montana State continue to run the two quarterback system?
I think if the personnel can match. If you're doing it just because that's what we do here, it's not going to work. If you're doing it because there's a nice yin-yang situation where it's two guys playing well off each other who can do different things, sure. I don't think they'll force it. I don't know if we have it worked because big cat, little cat, one guy could do different things. It was fun when it was working. It was fun. I think we'll probably see less of it. I don't think it'll go away completely, but I think it's going to kind of fizzle out.
Montana State needs to have a plan though, because if we're putting all of our eggs in Tommy Mellott's basket, that's nice. But he's proven not to be durable.
Yeah, well, I'm going to guess that they're going to curtail that running Tommy 30 times a game. I'm hoping if you're not doing two quarterback system, then you got to hand the ball off more, period.
I don't know if that's... You can't take that out of Tommy Mellott, though.
You can't.
It's like trying to take the stallion or thoroughbred out of the stallion or stallion out of the thoroughbred. I don't know what I'm trying to
say. I know what you're saying. You're not going to be able to do it. All the way. But we'll see. They have to have a backup plan, and they know that because, like you said, every year that Tommy's played, they've had to have a backup plan, so they're going to have one.
Speaking of which, that was some other news. Coach Vegan said by the time January runs around, Tommy should be okay. His injury was not surgical. However, if we would have won that game, he would have not been available. Also, Julius Davis was not available that game. Probably would have been available if he would have won that game.
I forgot, so, non-surgical as well. I forgot he didn't play in that game.
He was suited up, and if needed, they could have tried to play him, but...
You know, the offense wasn't really the problem.
No. Was it? All right.
Until so everyone was banked up at the end anyway.
Gosh, dang it.
That's not... I don't want to talk about
that. Talk about North Dakota State.
Yeah, we already did that.
Why'd you have to...
Go listen to the other episode.
Screw you, Tony. Just made me mad.
Well, apparently you're not over it either, if that's all it took.
No, I'm not, man. I'm not. It still sneaks up.
All right. Well, we just want to dive into the season recap now.
All right, buddy.
So we got some Golden Cooley questions we can pepper in as they come up. But yeah, how do we want to start this?
Well, let's go back to our predictions. Got mine right here. Predicted Montana State to go 9-2. We went 8-4.
Well, you predicted regular season. We didn't predict playoffs. So they went 8-3. 8-3.
So a little snippet. We have a 12-game season next year. We play week zero, and we have two byes.
Wait, yeah. We have two byes?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, I hit the wrong. I hope that doesn't pop up in the sound bar. Having some issues, control issues, clicking on things. So we're only playing 11 games in a 12-game season?
We have 12 games next year.
And two byes?
And two byes.
I don't understand how that works.
Pretty sure that's right. Probably wrong, but...
Yeah. Interesting, though. I've never understood like why the FCS is allowed to do it every 4 years and the FBS can do it every year. It's this weird rule that doesn't make any sense. I know that, I guess, it's because of the playoffs. There's more playoff games in the FCS, potential playoff games. But I don't know. Anyway, what were we talking about? I got way derailed on that.
We were going to start talking about the season recap.
Yeah. Why were we talking about the schedule? I can't remember why we were talking about the schedule.
Oh, because I said we went 8-4.
Oh, we're recapping our revisiting our season predictions. That's what it was.
Great podcast.
Yes. Well, I was having issues clicking around too, so I derailed myself. Yeah, I picked us to go 10-1, losing to South Dakota State.
And that loss.
I wanted a pencil in losing to the Grizz. I felt like we would, but I wasn't gonna speak that into existence. But yeah, 10-1 is what I had, and we were pretty close to going 9-2. Anyway, you know, two plays away from being undefeated headed into Cat Grizz.
Man, South Dakota State. It felt like that was the pinnacle of our season. If you look back on it, because all off season we're like, how do we match the Sons of Guns from the Dakota schools? And we came within inches of doing so. And I don't know what that did to the team. That could have been like, well, season. I don't think they thought season was over. I thought it was energizing. I was like, man, we're so stinking close.
Yep, same.
Amazing. It hurt, but the whole season was in front of us. The weird thing this year was we didn't seem to get better. And I remember on a couple episodes, I was trying to talk ourselves into that. Especially after kicking Eastern's butt right before the Grizz, we're like, we're peaking. I mean, we just waxed these guys. And then then famously you said, the Bobcats are not going to get knocked out of this. There's no way. Bobcats don't get knocked out. We get knocked. We take a punch. We come back. Well, the Grizz just shellacked us.
They just punched us. We just covered our heads.
Yeah. And didn't see that coming. It was just as bad as 2021. Which was weird.
No.
Didn't see that coming. And then it was just a tailspin.
It's a little better than 2021 in the fact that the Grizz are in the national championship. So at least you got beat by a team that was just on a mission, like a team of destiny, perhaps. So there's that. But score wise and on the field performance, yeah, it was worse. But we were supposed to be that team of destiny. We were the ones that, or this was going to be, okay. Do you want to talk about expectations right now? Because I feel like we're kind of leaning into this right now. You know, this team I thought had a really good chance to make a return trip. But I think everyone, including myself, was really looking forward to next year. This was the team that was going to be like mostly juniors. And next year was going to be like the senior team. I thought this team had a really good chance to be good. And then the way it started off, like, all right, we're really good. It's going to work out. This is going to be great. But like next year was going to be the year that I thought was going to... We were almost guaranteed to make a run to Frisco, which has changed now with the portal and a bunch of guys leaving and all that stuff. But my expectations for the year, I penciled it innocent at 10-1, but that's more just of what I thought of the schedule and the teams on the schedule. And I thought we could beat this team. I didn't think Idaho was going to be all that good, blah, 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 all these things. But then the way it actually transpired, the way we fizzled at the end and the way we lost in the first round or second round, first game we played. It's pretty disappointing, man. It was disappointing against expectations that kind of got heightened as the season progressed for me.
Something happened at Idaho that just, I think, infected the team.
It does seem like, I don't want to say like a rift, but something kind of just went sideways and it never fully recovered.
Yeah. like felt like the culture was slightly broken. Like there was some sort of cancer. And gosh, I just saying that right now is like, well, people are going to be like, oh man, there's who knows? This is just me speculating. But when the moment was the biggest, we weren't. And that has been opposite in years past.
Yeah. And that was,
and it seemed like there was like a lot of blame. Like we're trying to search for like, what was the reason? You looked on the sidelines, despondency, people bickering at each other. It was like people pointing fingers instead of like coalescing as a team and fighting through it. They're looking for excuses. And you know something's broken right there. Like how does that get into your culture? And now how do you get that out of your culture?
Yep. I wouldn't say that we shrank away from the light. The only time I thought that happened was in Missoula. But we're talking the three losses we had were what, a combined 10 points or something. Like those were hard fought football games that were close to the very end, and the Cats had a chance to win them. Every single one of them on like the last couple minutes of each of those games. So it's not like we just like got smoked all of a sudden, you know, Missoula aside. So it's just like, I don't know what happened. I don't want to say that there was some sort of problem with the team that caused them to kind of argue and bicker, and that's why they didn't play as well. It could be that, but we were close to not having any of these discussions. We were very close. You win the Idaho game, kick a couple field goals. Does that change how the team comes together after that?
When the going got tough, it seemed sometimes we couldn't overcome that. And I think this is fair criticism for Coach Vegan. Because if there's stuff going on your sidelines and you're not taking charge of that and that's not changing, you're the guy. The buck stops with you. And if you're allowing that to happen on your sideline, whatever's happening, and we won't get privy to that. No player is going to come tell us, hey, this is what's going on. And even if they did, we wouldn't tell it to you. No offense, but you know, there's certain things we just keep to our vest.
Well, this is Coach all secondhand Vegan stuff to me.
Yeah.
I didn't personally see any bickering or anything when I was watching on TV. No. This is all what other people have told us. So take that with a grain of salt.
I saw a little bit of it because I was at the Idaho game. But from what multiple media people were talking about during the Cat Grizz game, yeah, we didn't see that. The cameras weren't there. But that's a culture thing, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Find me a sideline in America where you're getting your butts kicked, where there's not some level of everyone getting at each other a little bit. I don't think that's too uncommon. Losing sucks. When you're getting your butts kicked, it sucks. People get mad. Tempers flare.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I don't know. Like I know exactly the podcast you're referring to. Brooks was talking about the dysfunction on the sidelines in the Cat Grizz game. He also said basically the same thing happened in Bozeman last year with the Grizz. When you get your butts kicked, it sucks. People get mad. So I don't know. I don't want to lean too far into that narrative. But yes, if there is something going on, it is obviously Vegan's job to make sure that there isn't. And I don't know if any of that had to do with Willie Mack's dismissal. Maybe that was a step towards fixing some of that, correcting that. That's, again, pure speculation. But I think, you know, he's doing what he needs to do in the offseason. It didn't work out in the season. I know a lot of people think it's going to make a break year for Brent Vegan. I'm not sure I'm going to go quite that far. We got to see better results, though, than this year, I think.
Yeah. Another year of regressing towards the end of the season. Not playoff win. Maybe getting beat at home by the Grizzlies. Coach Vegan definitely is going to be feeling the warmth.
I mean, yeah, if we miss the playoffs. I mean, basically, if we have the exact same season we had this year, I think he's okay. If it's anything less than this, it's going to get real hot real fast.
Then you start getting into that conversation. Well, Coach Ash was the winningest coach all time here, right? Am I correct? Still the winningest coach here?
I assume so. He had like 70 some odd wins.
Yeah, okay. But he can't win in the big moments, man.
Yeah, well,
what's going to happen? So,
yeah, I mean, I understand you, but Yeah, Vegan's already won more big-time playoff games than Ash ever did.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know. I want to riff on Vegan necessarily too much here. I think he gets a pass for me for next year.
To see what
he can do. To see if we can turn some, maybe it's just little things that need tweaking, and the Cats will be fine.
Yeah.
The sky is not falling yet, people.
Yeah, it's important to remember coaches can change too. Mm-hmm. People can change. Look what happened with Bobby Houck this year, right?
Right?
I mean, point in case, we're not going to spend time talking about the Grizzlies, but hey, things can change. And they can change mid-season, apparently. So it just takes a little bit wherewithal and go, okay, you know, assess what you have to do, put people in position to succeed, and then have set high expectations to demand that they get it done.
Love him or hate him, Bobby Houck has been a head coach for a long time. Brent Vegan has coached three seasons as a head coach.
That's a good point, man.
I know people have like short, you know, if you don't get it done right away, what have you done for me lately kind of guy. Like, get it done now. But look at like Stiegelmeyer at South Dakota State. How many years did that guy coach before he even made the national championship?
Like 2 decades, probably.
Yeah, forever. Another example, Jerry Moore at Appalachian State. When they went on that three-peat there, when they had Armani Edwards.
Monty Edwards, yeah.
He was there for like 16 years before that happened. Like, stuff doesn't always just come instantly.
And yeah, obviously, I don't think you don't want to see that leash anymore.
You don't want to see any regressing, so I totally get that. No, you don't get that leash anymore. That's like a rarity, because fans are fickle and boosters get mad. But I'm just saying that first-time head coach, he's been there for 3 years. It's not ready to throw him under the bus, even if next year's not amazing. I don't know. And I feel the same way about like House right too. That's kind of like he's been calling plays for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like he still is learning as a coach. Look at all the games that is. That's like, it's not a ton of games that you've actually called plays for.
Yeah.
So House right's lease is shorter to me, obviously, but There's some optimism, I think, for next year. I think that these guys can still learn and grow, and the Cats can absolutely be better, coaching-wise.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get into some grades, because I think we can riff on a little bit of the offense, specifically the defense and the special teams. We'll wrap up the season, kind of talk with that, and then we'll get into Golden Coolies. Sounds good?
Sounds good. Isn't this a Golden Coolie question, the grades?
No, this is a Ryan Foley.
Oh, that's a Ryan Foley special.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So I'm giving the offense an A-. Nationally, the total offense, we were number 3, rushing offense number 2, and scoring offense number 2 as well. When you look at all of our statistics within the Big Sky Conference, the scoring, rushing, and total offense, we were number 1. You can't lie with it. Can't lie, man. Where I'm giving the A- is, I think in big time games, we made some silly mistakes. Play calling was just kind of head scratchers. I think back to the Idaho game, being in the red zone, that last drive. That still bugs me a little bit. And also at the very end of the NDSU game, not being able to go for it on 4th-and-1, put the game away, essentially. A couple different things right there where it's like, man, in hindsight, you're always going to have that kind of vision. But overall, I thought the offense was really good. I thought the onset of, or the arrival of Julius Davis was awesome. Our offensive line, freaking great. But outside of some questionable play calling, I thought our offense did really great.
You just talked me from an A to an A-. I had it as an A, just a solid A. But you're starting to think like, yeah, I mean, the Idaho game scoring, was it 21 points we scored there? That's, and the 16 in South Dakota State, and 7 in Missoula. Those are bad performances. And
in your biggest games, we were the worst.
Except for North Dakota State. So we did right the ship a little bit there at the end. We had a few things there at the end, but Tommy got hurt. Chambers could hardly move. Davis was out. So, and there was some things there. But the play calling in that one is kind of, again, decision making. What was I going to say? I was going to say something. Oh, yeah. The other thing that drove me crazy all year was penalties. God. Way too many procedural penalties.
Yeah.
And always brutal. Always brutal time. If you get it on like your own 35 and then you convert the first down, it doesn't matter. If you're it's like third and five from the 6 yard line, you know, six and goal, third and goal from the six, and you get a false start, that's different. And that seemed to happen a lot. So our red zone scoring offense was pretty atrocious in terms of like punching in touchdowns. And nobody wanted to see us kick a field goal. So. Yeah, I say an A-. I was going to do an A. Couple little things here and there, an A-. But overall, yeah, pretty damn good dynamic offense. And I think we saw the progression of what Tommy can do there at North Dakota State to really sling the ball around. I think I'm excited for Tommy Watt next year.
Heck yeah. Good point right there. That was the best I've seen him play.
That was an amazing performance by Tommy.
All right. Why don't you talk about, do you want to do the defense?
I put the defense as a B. Just right in the middle B. Not a B plus, not a B minus. I thought they had really good moments. They had lapses. I thought when the effort was really there, they were tackling really well there for a stretch, and all of a sudden we couldn't tackle anybody. They were just way too inconsistent. I think inconsistency is what kind of defines the 2023 Bobcat defense. And I'll give them just a B.
I had C plus.
I don't want to go down to a B minus. I don't think that they deserve a B minus necessarily.
Well, I gave them a C plus. They were number four in our conference in the total defense. If you look nationally, they were scoring 31 in total defense. In the rush defense, they were number 45. The passing yards allowed, they were number 37. These are all bleh numbers.
Yeah.
And to me, if you want to be a nationally elite team, which Montana State needs to be a nationally elite team in the FCS, you can't have a middle of the road defense. That's a C plus for me, man. And that was generous because I was like,
yeah,
not passable. What I need to see, what Ryan Foley needs to see from the defense, more aggression. Absolutely more take your soul aggression. I got to see it. I can't put it any more plain than that.
I'll bump it to a B minus.
Down it to a B minus is what you're trying to say.
Bump it down. You can bump up and down. Bumping can go any direction. I get what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think that the talent was there enough. I don't know if the most talented defense the Bobcats have fielded, but they could have done better. And the coaching, the play calling, I think could have been better. Like you said, more blitzes. Just more blitzes. Don't go into prevent defense on 3rd and 11. Doesn't work for us. It continued to not work. So we did it up. We dialed it up against North Dakota State.
Exactly.
But then they scored 28 points
exactly
on us.
Exactly what I was just about to say.
Yeah. Or 28 in regulation, excuse me. Regulation.
I thought the defense looked the worst against the Grizzlies. It was just the epitome of everything I did not want to see. Playing on our heels,
yeah.
playing deep coverage, just letting them 2 yards on us. So
the whole team was overwhelmed.
Yeah. Weird. All right.
All right. Special teams. Why don't you? This is a hard one to grade because it had some bright spots, but overall, some game costing, season costing spots.
All right. Nationally, think about this. We were number one in punting.
Really?
47.1. Like net punting? Yeah, 47.1 yards per punt.
Brendan
Hall,
who
saw that coming? Yeah.
Well, I think we could see that coming from everything we heard about his leg all heading into the season. So it's not surprising that he could potentially lead the country in punting. He's got a huge leg. For punting. Well,
that was a big step up from what Bryce Layton was giving us last year. However, if now you just move within the conference, not nationally, but within the conference, we were number 10 in field goals. 4 for 11.
That wasn't last?
No. as percentage wise, it wasn't. 4 for 11 was pretty stinking bad.
That's what the total was for the year, is 4 for 11
on PATs. Yes, 4 for 11 and PATs. That just in conference, by the way. This is conference too. For points after, we were number 10 for again in the conference for made 37 out of 41. Special teams gets a C minus for me.
Yeah, I had him as a C. I debated a C minus as well. Those field goals were just brutal, man. I guess it's easy. If you're talking like field goals, it's an easy like D, borderline F. Like it's bad. That was a bad year kicking the football. Punting holds the average into the C.
Well, and touchbacks too. Kick. Oh, like,
okay. Yeah, I'm confident in my C then. I didn't even factor that in because you like I didn't do any research for this. So you told me before we started recording, like think about this for a quick second. So I have for a quick second. So this discussion is shaping my viewpoint. Yes, Brandon Hall booting the ball out of the end zone was massive. So still a solid C considering how bad the kicking was, the field goals, place kicking.
Yeah. All right. Those are grades. What a wild season, dude. Okay, it's getting
crazy season.
Golden Coolies.
Well, do you want to do like the MVP stuff right now, or is that one of the Golden Coolies?
That is one of the Golden Coolies. All right, let's see. Dive in there. Yep, we got to find our place. Okay, first one comes from Joe Catch Joe. What do you think was the key failure this season? Obviously, there was a lot to it, but what was the most insurmountable?
Place kicking. I would like to say defense would be my other one in terms of like just getting the big stops, getting off the field. All those crazy like 8-minute drives we kept giving up in Idaho, and it wasn't just Idaho. But man, you kick a few more field goals. We're talking different season here. We don't have a extra point blocked that was like kicked 6 feet off the ground. We might still be playing. Probably not. But we would have moved on. So field goals are, man. Just the special teams kicking was killer.
To me, it's a killer instinct. I think we lacked the killer instinct, whether it was on offense or defense. Feel like the Montana State Bobcats need to be tougher. We need to attack more. I think that was our critical failure. And to me, that comes from the coach. And I can't fix that. I thought Jeff Chill brought that in spades, left other things to wash. But if Montana State wants to be the top dog, we have to have more of a killer instinct. We have to take no prisoners. We have to be tough SOB out there to get the job done. No questions asked. Aggressive as heck on both sides of the ball.
Fair enough.
That was our failure.
Fair enough.
I like my, if you can't tell, Thorny, I like my teams to be tough and ultra aggressive. I did not see that this year. I felt that was lacking. Last year, we had that edge a little bit more, I felt like. This year, there was something that was wasn't there.
Well, there was like this quiet confidence up until about Idaho.
Yeah.
And things kind of just broke. But they're like, the Cats weren't like, you know, super pumped up, celebratory, rah-rah type team, but they were confident. You could tell those dudes expected to win and expected to beat you up. And I don't know, it changed.
I think you need a little bit more of the rah-rah emotion. Like, I get the maturity, quiet confidence kind of deal, and I get that's kind of like Coach Vegan's MO.
Was that how North Dakota State won all our national championships, being rah-rah, crazy, fired-up teams?
Yeah, I think they had a little bit more of that, though. You watch them. They celebrated all the time. That's part of their culture, man.
It's not really what I think of when I think of North Dakota State.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. Good question, Joe Katz. Helena Cats says, Cats lost three very close games to good teams. In each of those losses, there were several key spots when the Cats simply did not make a play. The lack of making plays happen on the offense, defense, special teams, penalties at key times, not scoring touchdowns when inside the 10, missing kicks, etc. Was this due to the lack of focus or other thoughts?
I mean, if you talk about key failures, that's another candidate. It was just nobody made the play when the play needed to be made. And that extends to several different parts of the team. Like, nobody made the play when a play needed to be made. How many times were we like, somebody step up here, somebody do something, and just didn't happen. Didn't happen. What was the question exactly? I wanted to talk about that before I got into the question.
So was this due to lack of a focus or other thoughts? It's kind of how we lost, key failures.
I don't know, man. Focus. That's a very hard one to put a pin on.
Yeah. It goes back to me, like the culture word, but that just seems too easy as well. Like you said, you need players to make plays.
Yeah, I mean,
guys did not step up.
Playmakers make plays. Do the Bobcats just not have playmakers?
Roger Fisher had a follow-up to that. He says, what do you think needs to be done to fix those failures? And how confident are you that will be fixed?
What failures are we talking about now?
Oh, I guess maybe that was Joe Catch Joe. What do you think the key failure was this season? I kind of parlayed that into Helena Cats, the losses and stuff that happened on defense, offense, and special teams. Essentially, Roger Fisher's asking, what do we need to do in order to fix what went wrong to the Montana State Bobcats this year?
To me, it almost feels like it's just some tweaking. I don't know. I don't think the thing's broken. I don't. Maybe whatever we did to practice tackling more, I believe, was something that was emphasized in North Dakota State. And for the most part, it was better, except a few times where a running back got one-on-one with poor Blake Stillwell. But I think most of the time, I thought everything that I wanted to see be better after the season ended heading into North Dakota State was better. We just had a few breakdowns, and again, the plays weren't made there at the end, but you know, Tommy was hurt, so we just had some options. So I don't know. I think it's close. I think some self-scouting in the offseason will do the Bobcats a lot of good.
I think we could add a special teams coordinator. BJ Armstrong, come back. We would love that. We lost North Dakota State. We lost Idaho on special teams. There's more to it. But if you look at the kicks, yes, that was a big part.
Find a reliable option at place kicker is a big point of emphasis. I mean, it was at the point where, like, I think most of us fans were like, just go for it when we have to kick it anywhere inside, like, the 30. Just like, golly, fourth and 10, whatever, go for it. Throw an interception in the end zone. It's better. Than missing a field goal 10 feet to the right. Anyway, let's move on from getting all worked up about it.
I know, and we'll keep you worked up because Judith Basin Cat asked, with the prevalent special teams play has been in the playoffs this year, it's obvious it's something to be improved upon. If you guys could call the shots, what would you do?
Why don't you start that one?
Yeah, I think I just kind of mentioned it. I would hire a special teams coordinator. I thought, you know, BJ Armstrong was the quintessential Bobcat coach. Outside of just being a good special teams coordinator, that guy just bled Bobcats. Culture, 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 man. That guy was Bobcat built. He knew how to get his players, everything out of his players. I think you just need more of guys like that. So kind of a two-part thing right there. I guess it's just having a guy that specifically focuses on special teams and coaches special teams. I think Coach Udy has that role, but he's also the wide receivers coach as well. So having a very specific guy as a special teams coordinator, and you could probably parlay that into recruiting coordinator or something like that, whatever it is. But also have a guy that just infects your culture with things the Bobcats value. The Bobcat way, I think they call it the Bobcat way. They don't call it the Bobcat way. They call it Bobcat built, or I'm not sure what it is, but I don't know, man. It's just, it's part culture, part coaching.
Do you really think a special teams coordinator makes either one of our place kickers from last year make more field goals?
Probably. Coaches them how to do better on her. We had trouble kicking point afters and field goals all season long.
Yeah.
If we have a coach coaching that, they got to get better at it.
Yeah, you would think. Sometimes you just don't have guys. Was this a Joe's problem or X's and O's problem? It's like if you got two guys who can't make a field goal, does a coordinator, do a specific coach help? I mean, yeah, that's what you do, right? If those are your two guys, you get a coordinator and you work on it. I'd say, if you're asking me what I do if I call the shots, is I make it a point of emphasis. I bring in a transfer kicker. Maybe I get a special teams coordinator, maybe not. I don't know the inner workings of how things are going on there. Maybe they're happy with how the guys are getting coached up. That something's got to change. I don't know. I'm leaning more towards personnel problems on this one than coaching problems.
Okay.
So get a transfer kicker in or develop those guys in the offseason.
We had a transfer kicker in. Sticks Hall.
Yeah, he wasn't. I think he was brought here because he wanted to punt and track field goals. I don't know that. I think I kind of speculate that's why he chose Bozeman. It's because like we'll give you a chance to do both. We guarantee you'll be able to do both. Maybe not. But he wasn't brought here to be a field goal kicker though. I don't think that was the thought. It's like, yes, this guy is the next Rory Perez. There's a throwback name for you. Guy who's a field goal kicker and a punter for the Cats. And a pretty good one at both.
Jason Cunningham, Sunshine.
He didn't punt.
Pretty sure he did.
He did not. I'm 100% positive he never punted the ball once as a Bobcat.
All right. Prodigal Cat gave us some homework. He says, who are your MVPs, offense, defense, special teams? Also, pick a most improved and give three players that flashed for next season. I will start.
Okay.
My MVP offense was Julius Davis. For defense, I have Nolan Askelson. For special teams, I'm sticking with Sticks Hall. Because that guy was a difference maker when it came to kickoffs and punting. I thought the most improved was Lavelle Price Jr. and Drew Polidor. And for next year, he said three. I'm going to give you more than three, Prodigal Cat. I think Andrew Paldrell, came on the scene as a freshman. Had McCullough, got to see half a season from him. Loved what I saw from that guy. Kate O'Reilly was thrown into the fire, essentially. I think that's just going to do him awesome as he goes forward. I love to see what Connor Moore is going to develop at over there on tackle. Zach Cruz at defensive end. Cedric Jefferson on our offensive line. I think in the receiver room, we have Lanada Alexander. And Javonte King is another guy from Idaho. Big receiver that I think has a bright future for Montana State.
Was the question flash in the field?
No, it was MVPs and then, yeah, I guess so. Three players that flashed for the next season, as Prodigal Cat says.
So how can you name a player who never played? Someone who flashed?
Yeah, whatever.
Just giving you a hard time. Offensive MVP, man, that's a tough one. I was leaning towards Julius Davis. The quarterback split makes that a hard one to pick a quarterback. It's like, do I pick an offensive lineman? Derek Snell. I'm going to pick Derek Snell. Offensive MVP.
Seriously?
Derek Snell. Yeah.
I mean, that's good, but he missed like half our games.
I know. I know, but we were so much better when he was in. So that's why he's the MVP.
That's a terrible call. I don't like that call, man.
All right, fine. Julius David.
There you go.
Make it the obvious, easy pick. Sort of. Defense, I picked Brody Grebe.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think he was the best defensive lineman we had. I think he wreaked the most havoc and he caused the most problems out of any of the defense, anybody on the defense, period. Askelson, I think, is a solid pick for you as well. But I liked Brody Grebe here. And my special teams, man, Tommy Sullivan, long snapper. Pinpoint snaps all damn year. Not a bad snap in the mix. That's worth noting.
Yeah.
I think he's a fantastic long snapper. And I think he's back for a senior year next year, which is exciting. So that would be my picks for MVPs. Most improved player on the entire team, probably Drew Polidor, from what we saw, the raw talent last year. But, like, is he ready for the field? I'm not sure. I'm not sure anybody else like was just like that much better than the last time I saw them doing anything. So I think Drew Polidor wins that one for me. Guys, I'm excited for next year. I'll just put it that way. Polidor, I'm excited to see him take the next step there, be healthy for a year. I'm really excited to see what Laniata Alexander can do at the wide receiver spot. I think that's an exciting one. Tommy Mellott. I put Tommy Mellott down here. He's going to probably be the guy next year. I don't think we're going to do the two quarterback thing. Like I said, what is Tommy going to do when he's going stem to stern all game long? And if he can throw the ball like he's spinning it against North Dakota State, I mean, he can have a Peyton type season.
Another guy I thought about just right now, Zach Black. He's going to come back. He only played two games. He played a game and a half, essentially. See him on the defensive line. He could make a big splash.
Yeah, I mean, I put Tommy on here because I just think he can be really good, better than we've seen. So it's like, who am I looking forward to? Like a flash that could be flash even more next year? I think Tommy fits this bill. I know it's easy to say like the guy who didn't get much playing time and stuff like that, but I'm like, no, I'm going to put Tommy on here. I'm doing it. So, all right. That's all I got for this, right?
Got one more question. That's a good question, Prodigal Cat, and thanks for the homework assignment right there. Which player from offense and defense that wasn't a starter this year are you most excited to see next season?
So that one, I could say Zach Black on defense. I think that was a good choice. I think he's going to be a guy who can really come in and be productive, especially with Valdez moving on. Kind of leaves a spot there on the defense. Another one that I'm pretty excited about is Zach Cruz. I'm kind of see where they put him. He's kind of a tweener size right now, so I'm not sure where he's going to fit in. But he made some plays, man, down the stretch. He's one of those guys that actually got some time as a young guy when no one else really was.
Yeah, to Colorado Cats question, I think I'm most excited to see Laniata play because we haven't seen him play.
Mm-hmm.
And on defense, yeah, maybe Zach Black. We were hearing great things about him, and then South Dakota State just sidelined him, and it just felt terrible for the kid. So I'm going with you on that.
All right. Okay. That's it, man. That's the one I wish I had more time to research, look through the roster, but that's what I got. That's what I got for now.
I think that's all. That's the wrap.
That's it, man. What a crazy season. Like, not the way anybody wanted it to end. Some really high moments here and there, but overall, I think it was just kind of a season that can be defined by almost. You could like hold your finger up, make the little pinchy motion. Like, we were so close in a few key spots to having a complete different trajectory of the season. You win one more of those games at Idaho and South Dakota State. Are you still a top four seed? Are you still getting home field advantage? Are you playing someone that's not North Dakota State in the first round? Like, so many things could have just changed ever so slightly. If we were undefeated, if we were 10-1 and that loss being to the Grizz, probably like a 3 seed.
And yet there's still so many questions, right? got waxed by the Grizz. We still didn't shake the monkey off our back with the Dakota State schools. All that's left for next year to be answered again.
Yep. That's true. Not many monkeys tossed off the back this year. We had so many, we were just flinging them left and right. But this is a year that kind of, the biggest ones that remained on your back are still there. Namely the Dakotas. Still. Lost to both of them this year. Fantastic.
Feels like going into this offseason, it feels more like a regrouping type of offseason. Last year, the focus was clear. Like, we were stinking close. We got to get bigger and faster, more tougher. That, you know, on the lines, got to be able to compete with the Dakota schools. Week two, we took South Dakota State to the wire. That would have been their only loss. Man, that's so damn close. We won the game and then got called off.
I know, that's a terrible way for it to end.
And not to think about all those stinking offside penalties or procedure calls, not offsides, false starts. Oh my gosh, crazy, right? Anyways, but this year, that's not the focus. It's like, yeah, we know that that's where we're at. We have the size. We have the, you know, we can compete with those guys. Now it's more like a, I don't know what it is. It's more of a
why didn't we compete? Let's figure out why. I think there's, like, yeah. I said, some self-scouting. There's going to have to be some questions asked, like, why didn't we get it done in the key moments when it mattered?
I would be wondering, like, what other people have to say. Because for me, I think I put pretty clearly, like, Montana State lacks that kind of killer instinct right now. Toughness, take no prisoners kind of mentality. I want to see that come back.
All right. Well, not sure everything else to say about this season here.
Nope.
I'm fading here pretty hard, too. I'm pretty tired. That does not help in the situation.
All right. Well, let's get out of here, Brian.
You need to pick a Golden Cooley winner.
Oh, yeah.
About half the time, we forget. We have all these Golden Cooley questions, and we just don't pick a winner. And we apologize. We just space it out. We don't do it on purpose, people. It just escapes our minds. We get so involved in the questions and start thinking deeply about the questions that we forget we're supposed to pick a winner.
I'm going to pick two tonight. I'm going to give one to Joe Catch Joe. What do you think the key failure for the season? Because I think that's the elephant in the room. And I'm also going to give one to Prodigal Cat because he, in this case, really asked us to kind of distill our MVPs. And I think that's an important question too. So Joe Catch Joe, Prodigal Cat.
All right.
Got yourself a Golden Cooley. Get at us. Send us your info. I'll send it in the mail.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for riding along with us for this crazy 2023 football season. We appreciate it. Hope anyone who we picked up knew along the way, hope you come back and hang out with us again next year. And don't forget to tune in. We're not done putting out content for this year. We got our Brickball episodes with our buddy Zach, our newest member of the squad, and then a rotating cast of Foley and myself, who has just been purely Foley right now. I'll be on there at some point. Good win tonight. Start off conference play by the men's squad, by the way. Beat Idaho State on the road. To throw that in here at the very end. I'm pumping the basketball podcast. Thanks again to Gear Up Sports for being our sponsor for this year. We really appreciate that. And same to Wilbur Ellis. We appreciate their business as well. You can always find us on the web, RRCatCast. You can find us on Twitter, RRCatCast, Instagram, RRCatCast. And Foley, let's get out of here for the final time on the football side of things. Let's go Cats.
Go Cats.